Come on and take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. All her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all. From Colorado, Kansas, and the Carolinas too, Virginia and Alaska, from the old to the new, Texas and Ohio and the California shore. Tell me who could ask for more? Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. All her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all. Yet she's only as rich as the poorest of the poor, only as free as a padlocked prison door, only as strong as our love for this land, only as tall as we stand. For here is a land full of power and glory.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
While many countries are withdrawing citizens from war-torn Iraq, thousands of Nepalese workers are arriving daily with the help of illegal agents. More than 15,000 Nepalese job seekers have been supplied to Iraq via Kuwait-based companies. Many of the workers en route to Iraq have found themselves in the Indian city of Mumbai, where they end up stranded. India has banned its citizens from traveling to Iraq following the abduction of Indians by militants. The Nepalese workers, who are no longer in contact with their agents, are often prevented from leaving the guest houses in Mumbai because they have no money to pay the rent.
Fed up with working 2 years without a contract, the New York City Firefighters Union is seeking arbitration. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, worth an estimated $5 billion, is refusing to give unionists more than a one-time bonus of $1,000 and a 5% raise over 3 years, not keeping up with inflation. In addition, Bloomberg is asking that firefighters work longer hours and have less days off. The Uniform Firefighters Association has said it will join the thousands of demonstrators picketing the Republican National Convention later this month.
Indigenous oil workers in Nigeria are threatening to strike. Their primary concern is the influx of foreign oil workers, mainly from the U.S. and Europe, operating in the Niger Delta region. In July, workers shut down one oil company, demanding that Nigerian workers be promoted to senior positions that are normally reserved for foreigners. In addition, ExxonMobil has been facing similar strike threats. Workers are charging Exxon with violating expatriate quotas by employing foreigners for jobs that could be done by local workers. With Nigeria being the sixth largest world producer of crude oil, any unrest has a detrimental effect on the cost of gas prices throughout the world.
A repeat of the four-month lockout in California was averted as union employees at Kroger, the nation's largest supermarket chain, voted to accept a new four-year contract on Tuesday. Five stores in Kentucky rejected the offer, which requires employees to start paying health insurance premiums in 2007. But the contract increases wages by 8%, protects the pension plan, and allows workers with seniority to transfer to other stores.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Internal documents from Microsoft reveal that the company has nearly 2,000 workers in India, double the amount they reported having there in June. The company has said that it does not send core technology work overseas, but the documents obtained by Wash Tech suggest otherwise. In addition, the Seattle Times has reported that the company is in the process of building a 42.5-acre facility in India that could employ several thousand workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Time for another Gooberhead Award. Presented periodically to those in the news who have the tongues going 100 miles per hour, but who forgot to put their brains in gear. Today, I've got a whole nest of goobers for you, all of whom are nesting in the fraud-ridden Pentagon. Except when they fly that coop to feather their nest with top jobs at Lockheed, Boeing, Halliburton, and other corporations that pocket billions in bloated Pentagon contracts. The scam of such goobers is to work a while at the Pentagon, gain insider knowledge and contacts, then peddle their insider connections to corporations wanting more fat contracts from us taxpayers. Take Pete Aldridge, who has made a career of spinning in and out of the revolving door between the Pentagon and military contractors. He was Secretary of the Air Force, then, whoosh, whoosh, he left to become President of Air Force contractor McDonnell Douglas. Then, whoosh, whoosh, George W. brought him back inside to be in charge of all Pentagon purchases. Last year, whoosh, whoosh, he left again, this time to become a highly paid board member at Lockheed. But just before leaving, he personally approved a $3 billion contract for 20 jet fighters to be made by, you guessed it, Lockheed. Even while Pete's on Lockheed's payroll, whoosh, whoosh, Bush named him chairman of a Space Exploration Commission. Pete's commission recently called for privatizing NASA. Guess what corporation stands to gain the most from such a move? Bingo, if you said Lockheed. About his glaring conflicts of interest, Pete simply declares that he's in compliance with current ethics laws. But of course, these laws are shams, written by lobbyists for goobers like Pete. Legal isn't the same as moral. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about this nest of goobers, call the Project on Government Oversight, 202-347-1122.
Hi, this is Doug Dupuy for SelectQuote, and I just called...
Cheryl Payne.
One of SelectQuote's licensed agents.
Hi, Mr. Dupuy.
Hi, Cheryl. Why buy term life insurance through SelectQuote instead of somebody else?
Well, Mr. Dupuy, about 2 out of 3 people have health or lifestyle issues. Could be high blood pressure, skydiving. Now, depending on what insurance company you choose, you could overpay hundreds of dollars a year.
Well, where does SelectQuote come in?
SelectQuote's a real matchmaker. We impartially shop the pick of America's top life insurers to match you with your best buy.
Got an example?
Sure. I just matched a man 40 years old who takes cholesterol medication with a $500,000 policy for under $22 a month.
Quite a match, Cheryl. Why not let SelectQuote match you with your best buy? Just call 1-800-772-8300. That's 1-800-772-8300. Or log on to SelectQuote.com.
Example is First Colony Preferred Best Colony 10-year term policy form 1420 and 1421 et al. Underwritten by First Colony Life Insurance Company, a GE Financial Assurance Company, Lynchburg, Virginia. Policy subject to underwriting approval, available in most states.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
April 20th, 1920. Say what? What happened on April 20th, 1920? No, it's today's date, Thursday, August the 12th. 82 days to regime change. 727 days since the United States was attacked by the anthrax killer, still unknown. And George Bush, our great, we will find those terrorists, president. Still clueless. 644 days since the beginning of the search for weapons of mass destruction. 431 days since the outing of a CIA agent brought down an entire international counterterrorism ring. But what happened on April 20th, 1920? That was when the French and the World War I had just ended in 1919. And representatives of the French and the British met in a small town in France to decide what to do about Iraq. Later that year, rebels in Iraq rose up against the British and threw them out. It was the rebellion of 1920. Sadr, Muqtada al-Sadr, has been citing the revolution of 1920. His newspaper talks about the revolution of 1920. One of the groups that is, part of the uprising calls themselves the 1920s Brigade, or a variation on that, depending on how you translate it. And where did this happen? This uprising of 1920 that is, that this is not just like, you know, one little thing. I mean, there are shrines to this uprising. This was the beginning. Yes, it led to, you know, it led to anarchy, basically, for several decades. Before finally, you know, a strong man came along. Actually, a series of them in the 50s, and then Saddam. But nonetheless, this is commemorated by the Iraqis as the beginning of their independence from European forces, from the Ottoman Empire, from, you know, the whole thing. There are statues around the country. Every school child can tell you all about the revolt of 1920. And a good chunk of that battle took place around the Imam Ali Mosque in Najaf. In 1920, as the Los Angeles Times reports today in an article by Henry Chu and Teresa Watanabe, in 1920, rebels intent on kicking out British troops occupying the region gathered at the mosque and readied for revolt. Sound familiar? Among their leaders was Saeed Mohammed Sadr, from the prominent Shiite family and a future prime minister. This was the grandfather of Muqtada al-Sadr, the guy who's in the mosque right now. How many Americans do you think realize this? Do you think George Bush realizes it? He doesn't read newspapers, so he probably is clueless about it. The Muslims in the area, not just in Iraq, but from all over the Middle East, are, quote, disturbed by news reports showing U.S. soldiers stepping on graves and destroying the photos of loved ones laying on top of the crypts. This in the million-person cemetery next to the mosque, where for centuries, people who want to be buried on the holiest site to Shia Islam have come to be buried. Sort of like the Mount of Olives to the Jews, or the Vatican to Catholics. So this is the son-in-law of, as I recall, he was the son-in-law of Muhammad. Many believe was his rightful heir. I mean, there was this split in Islam, you know, a generation after Muhammad. And this guy, Ali, for a long time, yeah, he died. Nobody knew where he was. Then they discovered his body, or they discovered what they believe was his body, buried in Najaf, and they built a mosque over it. This was like hundreds, nearly 1,000 years ago. I mean, this is hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Ali was assassinated in the year 661. It's believed that this mosque was built in the 8th century. And the countries with very significant Shia populations, Afghanistan, India, Pakistan, Lebanon, and other nations, are very concerned. And there's a possibility of a retaliation if we go in there. Notice also India and Pakistan have nuclear weapons. This thing, you know, this... In the eyes of most Shiites, the LA Times notes, only a leader with the standing of Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani could issue permission to attack at the mosque. He's sort of the Pope of the Shia. He's an Iranian, and he's currently in London being treated for heart disease. He's not around. He's not doing news conferences. He's not offering his opinions. Some wonder if he even got out of town just to let this thing play itself out. Being an Iranian, he could not run for office in Iraq
Probably wouldn't want to anyway. The guy's pretty committed to being a cleric and not a politician. But now we've got this, the fierce combat of the last week. Some of it hand-to-hand broke hundreds of tombstones in half. The Shiites are dismayed by the militarization of their final resting place there. Can you imagine what would happen if a bunch of Saudi forces were battling for control of the Vatican? What might happen? It's mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. Our conservative alert for the day. Our conservative alert for the day, yes, indeed. For the past 10 days, this from the staff of the Boston Globe, article by Scott S. Greenberger. For the past 10 days in today's paper, yesterday's paper, excuse me. For the past 10 days, temporary workers hired by Norway Hill Associates have been collecting signatures for Ralph Nader around the state of New Hampshire. Now, who is Norway Hill Associates? Well, it's a Hancock, New Hampshire firm headed up by a well-known GOP consultant. Last Friday, about a dozen workers buttonholed Bush supporters in the parking lot outside of Stratham Farm where the president was speaking. You get this. George Bush comes to town. He gives a speech. Of course, to get into a Bush speech, you have to sign a loyalty oath. You have to show your Republican registration card as a registered Republican. You can't be wearing anything that might imply that you're anything other than anti-abortion. Blah-de-blah-de-blah, right? And you can wear an American flag. I guess that's it, although even that may be suspect now. And so anyhow, so you've got these people coming out of this event. And you know that these people are the most committed to this bizarre religion of conservatism that Bush has been preaching, of extremist conservatism. These are the real ideologues. These are the ones who believe that the ends justify the means. So they're the ones who would be most likely to say, sign up for Nader? I don't believe in Nader, but sure, I'll do that because it's going to help Bush, they would say. And in fact, that's exactly what these canvassing folks were saying to them. These folks from Norway Hill Associates, run by this well-known GOP consultant, they were armed with talking points, writes the Boston Globe, instructing them to remind reluctant Republicans that, quote, this is what they're saying to these people as they're walking out of the event with George Bush. Without Nader, Bush wouldn't be president. And so the Bush aficionados, the Bush groupies say, oh, yeah. Well, in fact, here's another one of their talking points. I mean, this is literally from their talking points. This is what they're saying to Republicans as they're walking out. In 2000, Nader got almost 30,000 votes here in New Hampshire. Without his presence, Al Gore would be president today. Which, by the way, may be true. Because in New Hampshire, Bush beat Al Gore by only 7,000 votes. And Ralph Nader did get 30,000 votes in New Hampshire. And if a majority of those votes had gone to Gore instead of Bush, and of course that's something that's still argued by the Nader camp, but I don't think taken particularly seriously by anybody else on earth. I can hear the Nader folks now. He's a heretic! Well, Ralph, come on the show. Tell us. Tell me if I'm wrong. If Gore had won New Hampshire, the talking points point out, the Granite State's electoral votes would have sent Al Gore to the White House even if Bush actually had won Florida. It was that tight. At the same time, you've got two conservative groups in Oregon admitting making phone calls, urging supporters to help Nader get on the ballot there. According to this article in the Boston Globe yesterday, Nader's spokesman Kevin Zeese said yesterday that the campaign is not working with Norway Hill and that it won't knowingly accept signatures collected by its temporary workers. Well, that's very noble. Why would they take signatures in Michigan if not in New Hampshire, though? Zeese says, we told the Republicans we don't want their help, and we don't want their help. If they give them to us, we won't accept them. That's all we can do. Yeah, the problem is the Republicans aren't giving them to Zeese. They're giving them to the Secretary of State. Zeese acknowledged it might be impossible to distinguish between the firm's signatures and those collected by his own volunteers. They need to get 3,000 signatures. Who's the guy who heads this political consulting firm that is canvassing for Ralph Nader outside George W. Bush events? And by the way, you can bet your bottom dollar, if anybody else had been standing around outside a George W. Bush event that wasn't approved of by George W. Bush, they would be hustled off to a free speech zone or locked down. In this era when so many people have been arrested just in the vicinity of Bush speeches because they were wearing the wrong T-shirt or carrying the wrong sign. Well, this guy is David Carney, the head of Norway Hill, and he was the political director, to George Herbert Walker Bush. Yep, sure enough. The New Hampshire Republican Committee says, well, we're just trying to maximize choices for voters. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told. If you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
We the people now face a fundamental choice. Take back our government or do nothing and become the victims of tyranny and empire.
That is the message in a revealing new book by Tom Hartman, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People takes a hard look at America's past, present, and future. You'll find out that the Patriot Act is not unique. In 1798, President John Adams pushed the Alien and Sedition Acts through a Federalist Congress, enabling him to have his unpatriotic critics arrested and imprisoned, putting numerous opposition newspapers out of business. While a bit more subtle, Hartman says, this administration is likewise attempting to suppress any criticism, to eradicate any opposition. Progressive talk show host Janine Garofalo says, read this book for a jolt of illumination. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call the program, 1-866, toll free, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to sign up for our newsletter, go to www.tomhartman.com. We don't sell or redistribute our list. You can also drop into our chat room and into our message archives, our message board, rather, where people can post messages and have conversations in non-real time. If you want to get a real-time conversation, every Monday through Friday, every day for the 3 hours that we're on the air, drop into the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, which is the link where you just click chat off tomhartman.com and click the chat button there and drop yourself into room number 7. It's titled The Tom Hartman Program, and welcome. So we've got the Bush lie of the day. I've got an amazing chart on Bush approval ratings and terror alerts I want to tell you about. In fact, I just put links to it on our website, so you can easily find them. But I just to finish up this point about the Nader campaign, I wrote about this last week on Common Dreams. Got a mind-boggling amount of email. I haven't been able to answer. Well, frankly, I didn't answer any of it because there was just so much. I've stuck it all in a folder. And it's funny how it was either, finally, somebody telling the truth, or you are misinformed, sir. Ralph Nader's actually a big advocate of instant runoff voting. I mean, that was basically what the two, you know, you're misleading people about his positions. Well, you know, I'm do a Google search on Ralph Nader speech transcripts. It'll pull up 1,000 or more hits. Now, you know, only a small percentage of them are actual transcripts of his speeches, but there's a bunch of them out there. Then add to that Google search the phrase proportional representation. You suddenly get zero hits. Zero hits. It's just, you know, it's not part of his stump speech. I mean, maybe it will be starting this week. But as those of you who are longtime listeners to this program know, we have had no shortage over the last year of people calling up and saying, I just came back from a Ralph Nader speech, and I want to know why the Democrats and the Republicans are conspiring to keep him off the ticket. Blah, 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 blah. And I say, what, did Ralph explain to you about proportional representation or instant runoff voting? No. No. So Ralph Nader has done some really extraordinary things in the United States. He's a true American hero in my mind. It's one of the reasons I voted for him in 2000. And he did much of that by creating these extraordinary non-governmental organizations like the Center for Auto Safety and Public Citizen. You could say single-handedly Ralph Nader has saved the lives of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of American citizens. And thus, people all around the world in other countries that adopted our safety standards. Unsafe at any speed. He really and truly changed the face of America in a positive way. And that's what I think he should continue doing. He's got a great track record. He has successfully built these organizations to take on these issues. If he really wants to see more democracy in America, a more democratic nation, if he truly wants to see proportional representation and instant runoff voting in the United States, why not create a nonprofit organization devoted to that, like he did with his devotion to Pintos not exploding or seatbelts in cars or the many other issues that he's taken on successfully. Why not create an NGO, pull together volunteers from across the political spectrum, and get out there and start lobbying and informing people and transform the face of America? He was tremendously effective until he decided to run for president. Now everybody is backing away. You know, what is with this guy? And I keep saying, hey, Ralph, come on the program. Tell us. I will listen thoughtfully and give you your say. I will not trash Ralph. And I will not be disrespectful. I would love to have him explain why he is, in my opinion, misleading, particularly his college audiences when he speaks to them on these things. 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
While many countries are withdrawing citizens from war-torn Iraq, thousands of Nepalese workers are arriving daily with the help of illegal agents. More than 15,000 Nepalese job seekers have been supplied to Iraq via Kuwait-based companies. Many of the workers en route to Iraq have found themselves in the Indian city of Mumbai, where they end up stranded. India has banned its citizens from traveling to Iraq following the abduction of Indians by militants. The Nepalese workers, who are no longer in contact with their agents, are often prevented from leaving the guest houses in Mumbai because they have no money to pay the rent.
Fed up with working 2 years without a contract, the New York City Firefighters Union is seeking arbitration. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, worth an estimated $5 billion, is refusing to give unionists more than a one-time bonus of $1,000 and a 5% raise over 3 years, not keeping up with inflation. In addition, Bloomberg is asking that firefighters work longer hours and have less days off. The Uniformed Firefighters Association has said it will join the thousands of demonstrators picketing the Republican National Convention later this month.
Indigenous oil workers in Nigeria are threatening to strike. Their primary concern is the influx of foreign oil workers, mainly from the U.S. and Europe, operating in the Niger Delta region. In July, workers shut down one oil company, demanding that Nigerian workers be promoted to senior positions that are normally reserved for foreigners. In addition, ExxonMobil has been facing similar strike threats. Workers are charging Exxon with violating expatriate quotas by employing foreigners for jobs that could be done by local workers. With Nigeria being the sixth largest world producer of crude oil, any unrest has a detrimental effect on the cost of gas prices throughout the world.
A repeat of the four-month lockout in California was averted as union employees at Kroger, the nation's largest supermarket chain, voted to accept a new four-year contract on Tuesday. Five stores in Kentucky rejected the offer, which requires employees to start paying health insurance premiums in 2007. But the contract increases wages by 8%, protects the pension plan, and allows workers with seniority to transfer to other stores.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Internal documents from Microsoft reveal that the company has nearly 2,000 workers in India, double the amount they reported having there in June. The company has said that it does not send core technology work overseas, but the documents obtained by Wash Tech suggest otherwise. In addition, the Seattle Times has reported that the company is in the process of building a 42.5-acre facility in India that could employ several thousand workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Okay, the chat room is going nuts now. It's people, how can you say that, Ralph? Well, here's the deal. Ralph, in his speeches, regularly refers to the fact that, well, here's a, this is the quote from the Meet the Press. It's just an example. You'll find this in most of Ralph's speeches. You never find this type of thing, that's the resistance to a third party, in Canada or Western democracies in Europe. It's an offense to deny millions of people who might want to vote for our candidacy an opportunity to vote for our candidacy. Instead, they, Republicans and Democrats, want to say, no, we're not going to let you have an opportunity to vote for our candidacy. Now, on that second point, I agree. And in fact, I said so in the I believe it was the last sentence, last paragraph of the article that I wrote. The Republicans and the Democrats, sure enough, don't want third parties around because they challenge their power. I agree. But that's not the problem. The problem is that the average American doesn't realize why it is that in Western democracies in Europe or in Canada, you can have third parties and you don't here in the United States. It has to do very simply with proportional representation. So it's like, you know, it's this is called setting up a straw man argument. I personally consider it deceptive. And I would love to hear Ralph say why that's okay, because I don't think that he's a guy who stands for deception, frankly, or at least that's. That's my, you know, my understanding of him historically is that he's a straight shooter. So let's see if he'll come on and he'll come clean about this. The Bush, this is wonderful. Our Bush lie of the day. This comes from Karen Hughes' book. Karen Hughes recounts a conversation. This is her book, 10 Minutes from Normal. She recounts a conversation with Bush after Russian President Vladimir Putin grilled him on his Yale days. This quoting from the book, from Hughes's book. President Putin knew you had played rugby, but he didn't know the context. I mean, you just played for one semester in college, right? Hughes said. Bush corrected. I played for a year, and it was the varsity. You got that, George Bush? He played for a year, and it was the varsity. Rugby at Yale. Now, we know he was a cheerleader. He was on the cheerleading squad of Andover. In fact, he was the head cheerleader. But that's about the only athletic activity anybody can find. And it turns out, yesterday, a Yale spokeswoman confirmed that there was no such thing as varsity rugby at Yale. Not when Bush was an undergraduate in the 1960s, and not even today. Our Bush lie of the day. Yes, I was varsity rugby. It didn't exist. Oh, my. Just keeping up with it, you'll recall there was no immediate film. When the first plane hit the first tower, it was not televised. The televised clip you see is the second plane hitting the second tower. In fact, it wasn't until a day later that any videotape showed up really of consequence at all of that first plane. So it was not on TV, number one. And number two, the school in Florida where George was reading My Pet Goat. Actually, he was having it read to him. I don't think that they would take a chance of having him read something to children. Anyhow, where the children were reading My Pet Goat to him, the TVs were not turned on in that school. But, well, I'll just for the heck of it, I'll give you a second Bush lie of the day.
I was sitting outside the classroom waiting to go in. And I saw an airplane hit the tower the TV was obviously on, and I used to fly myself, and I said, well, there's one terrible pilot.
Yeah, it got a good laugh and, you know, in front of a whole bunch of Republicans, but the reality is that that was never shown. He couldn't have seen it. It was impossible. This is really scary. I mean, this is something really scary. The Julius blog has brought this thing up. And you'll find links to it. You go to tomhartman.com and click through to our message board. I just posted it on the, I believe it's International Affairs part.
And Julia's blog, it's actually juliasblog.blogspot.com. And he notes, late last week, Biltud and I posted the now famous timeline in this blog. The day I posted the chart, it's been very popular. Many people have sent good feedback. One wonders why the mainstream media never had the courage to do something as simple as track this readily available information. Then he says, on the other hand, since Friday, my email account has been inundated with pernicious emails containing all sorts of computer viruses and worms. Yesterday, my home computer was attacked and the hard drive was rendered inoperable. On Sunday, my firewall caught several attempts at intrusion. So at this point, I'm not sure if it was a virus or intruder. I'm still working with my ISP to further track these logs. Tonight, I'll see if I can recover anything in that hard drive. Since this morning, the virus emails are being sent en masse to my email account, and I'm tracking every single one of them to their original ISP. This is what freedom of speech has become in this very divided environment, he says. We can only defend our civil rights by exercising them, so no, I won't censor my opinions. Not only will I not remove the graphic and timeline, but I've posted an updated version. Now, what is it that has brought the ire of cons against this? Well, it's very straightforward. It's a chart. You can see it. I would just give you the URL, except it's a really long one. It's the kind of thing you couldn't write down fast enough, and I couldn't read it slow enough, you'd fall asleep. It's one, you know, it's got 30 characters in it. So therefore I post it. You just go to tomhartman.com and click on message boards, and it's right there. And you can just click right through to it. And it's a graph of time that starts on January 20th, 2001, before 9/11. Up to the present, or up to the end of July, anyway, July 20th. And what you find is that every time Bush's approval rating, which is one graph, every time it starts to tank, there's a major terror alert announced in the media. And every time the terror alert is announced in the media, Bush's approval ratings go back up again. And then they tank, and they issue another terror alert, and it goes back up again. And then they tank, and they issue another terror alert, and it goes back up again. And they've got all the orange alerts on this graph and all the terror alerts. And it's eye-popping. Whenever his ratings dip, there's a new terror alert, he notes. There's a few things that are quite evident from the chart. This I'm reading from the blog spot, Julia's blog. Every terror alert is followed by a slight upticking of Bush approval ratings. Whenever there are many unfavorable headlines, there's another alert or announcement, the distraction effect. And then he notes, as we approach the 2004 election, the number and frequency of terror alerts keeps growing to the point that they collapse in the graphic. At this time, Bush's ratings are lower than ever at the same time. So it's like they've been flogging that horse, and it's been running, and now they're beating it. And time will tell whether it keeps going. But Howard Dean said that Howard Dean, the little boy who said the emperor's wearing no clothes, right? Howard Dean is our truth teller. I say this not because I have any loyalty to him because he was the governor of the state that I live in for a decade. Because frankly, when he was governor here, I thought, you know, he was okay. I figured he was a Rockefeller Republican. He was a very conservative Democrat who was obsessive compulsive about balancing the budget in the only state in the union that does not require by its constitution that the budget be balanced. And previous administrations had run deficits. But so often, Howard Dean was proved right. And this is just, it's right here, you can see it. I mean, it's this incredible graph. You see the line go up, 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 you know, in Bush's approval. Right after a terror attack or a terror alert, and then it goes down, 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 and then they issue a terror alert, it goes up, 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 a week later it slides down, down, down. They issue another terror alert, it goes up, 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 and then a week later it goes down. They issue another terror alert, it goes up. It's amazing. And they're tracking, you know, the bad headlines in the ABC Post, the CBS, New York Times polls, CBS. It's just remarkable. Highly recommend it. Highly recommended. Speaking of deceptions, and I'm wondering if anybody has heard yet, the noble and esteemed Mr. Hannity apologizing for the lies he has told on the air. It's I haven't. Have you? I don't know. Maybe he has. But, I sort of doubt it. This from David Sirota of the Center for American Progress. He says, responding to a direct challenge by Fox News' Sean Hannity to document, quote, one example where I said something that was so false, end quote. The Center for American Progress put together a list. They call it the document Sean Hannity doesn't want you to read. And New York Observer reporter Joe Hagan gave it to him. He says, I never questioned anyone's patriotism. Specifically, Hannity tried to justify asking his guest Stanley Cohen on April 30th of last year. That is it, that you hate the president, or that you hate America. See, this is the thing I was talking about the day before yesterday, where I said, you know, what Bush was doing was setting up the kind of question for Kerry, and Kerry took the bait. I'm still banging my head against the wall. Set up the question that Richard Nixon was wily enough, smart enough, sure, to not do this. A reporter asked him one of these kinds of questions, and Richard Nixon said, I'm not still beating my wife. Because it's a, are you still beating your wife question. I mean, how do you answer that? Are you still embezzling money from your employer? Are you still shooting heroin every day? No. Are you still kicking dogs? No. So Hannity, is it that you hate this president or you hate America? Come on, give me an answer. The eloquence. Here's Hannity. Stanley Cohen, who is the Hamas attorney. Do you know who he is? He's the political wing of Hamas, a terrorist organization. Is it that you hate the president or that you hate America? That's a question. That's not saying you're un-American, which is how I would interpret saying you're un-American. Hannity sipped his Coke. Depends on what you and how you say questioning one's patriotism, he said. Yeah. So, weapons of mass destruction. Let's just see. Have you heard Hannity apologizing for this on weapons of mass destruction? He says, on April 13th, 04, he says, you're not listening, Susan. You got to learn something. He had weapons of mass destruction. He promised to disclose them, and he didn't do it. You would have let him go free. We decided to hold him accountable. Well, sounds nice. It's the standard Republican talking point, and it's a lie. Here's the fact. Hannity's assertion comes more than 6 months after Bush administration weapons inspector David Kaye testified that his inspection team had, quote, not uncovered evidence that Iraq undertook significant post-1998 steps to actually build nuclear weapons or produce fissile material and had not discovered any chemical or biological weapons. A quote from David Kaye on October 2nd of the year before Sean Hannity said this. I haven't heard him apologize for that bit of misinformation. And then he says he promised to disclose them and he didn't do it. You don't remember 13,000 pages of documents being given to the United Nations, and then the U.S. said, oh, wait a minute, we've got to take those and black out a few things like, we'll never know for sure because the Bush administration immediately classified them. But most people who have looked at the documents figure pretty solidly what they were blacking out was all the weapons of mass destruction that Don Rumsfeld was selling to Saddam back during the Reagan administration when he was our buddy and we were helping him in the war against Iran. Or maybe the business deals, the $73 million in business that he did with Dick Cheney when Dick Cheney was president of Halliburton. So, 9/19/03, Hannity says, Colin Powell has just had a great piece that he had in the paper today. He was there in Iraq. He said things couldn't have been better. That's what millions of Americans heard. Well, here's what Colin Powell actually said. I am quoting Colin Powell now. Iraq has come very far, but serious problems remain, starting with security. American commanders and troops told me of the many threats they face, from leftover loyalists who want to return to Iraq to the dark days of Saddam, from criminals who were set loose on Iraqi society when Saddam emptied the jails, and increasingly from outside terrorists who have come to Iraq to open a new front in their campaign against the civilized world. Things couldn't have been better. And then Hannity again, 12-9-02. And in northern Iraq today, this very day, al-Qaeda is operating camps there, and they're attacking the Kurds in the north, and this has been well-documented and well-chronicled. Now, if you're going to go after al-Qaeda in every respect, obviously they have the support of Saddam, or we're not. Here's the fact. David Kaye was on the ground for months investigating the activities of Hussein's regime. He concluded, quote, "But we simply did not find any evidence of extensive links with al-Qaeda, or for that matter, any real links at all," end quote. He called a speech that Cheney gave where he made the claim that there was a link between al-Qaeda and Saddam, quote, "evidence-free." Evidence-free. Now, it's a polite way of saying, he's making it up! It's just remarkable. The Center for American Progress says, the 9/11 investigation, a Hannity lie. The recession, a series of Hannity lies. They've got like 20 of them here. The Hispanic vote, a Hannity lie. White House vandalism, a Hannity lie. Patriotism, a Hannity lie. Separation of church and state, a Hannity lie. James Madison, he's lying about the founders. The Alabama Constitution, a lie. Rent for public housing, Kerry tax plan, lies. Amazing. Amazing. 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
An ancient civilization that turned to dust holds important lessons for modern society, according to a new book. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Nineveh was a city of gleaming palaces set in the fertile crescent of Mesopotamia, but the capital of the Assyrian Empire crumbled away 4,000 years ago, done in by soil erosion and other environmental problems that destroyed the ancient civilization. Paul Ehrlich sees parallels in our current environmental troubles. Ehrlich and his wife Anne have written a new book called One with Nineveh. He says our society is also heading for disaster, but unlike the Assyrians, we should know better.
The rulers of Mesopotamia, of Nineveh, had a lot of pride, a lot of hubris, but they had the justification that they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know that they were ruining their environmental supports. On the other hand, the rulers of the United States have a scientific community, the best in the world, that has been telling them, along with the rest of the world's scientists, in no uncertain terms, that we are destroying our life support systems, and one of the main ways we're doing it is burning too much coal, oil, and natural gas.
Ehrlich says burning fossil fuels could be our undoing because carbon dioxide and other greenhouse pollutants are causing the Earth to overheat. He says the science behind this assertion is rock solid, but people continue to play politics with the issue, and he says we continue to waste our natural wealth like there's no tomorrow.
We're like the profligate child that inherited a vast fortune from the planet, and every year we're writing a bigger check on that fortune, and the politicians are very proud of it, but the scientists are watching what's happening to the balance in the checking account, and the balance is going down ever more rapidly.
Ehrlich, who also wrote the 1968 bestseller The Population Bomb, sees irony in the fact that Nineveh was located in what is now Iraq. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Panama, Apollo, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Topeka, Anchorage, Amadilla, I'm a killer, I've been everywhere, man.
And welcome back. Juxtaposing the Bush approval ratings chart on the terror alerts chart, you get it. You get it. I mean, it's just, it's absolutely unambiguous. You get it, what's going on. And now, as the Los Angeles Times writes, an article by Jeffrey Fleischman, yesterday's the Los Angeles Times, heightened terror alerts and high-profile arrests of suspected Islamic extremists have international security experts and officials concerned that the Bush administration's actions could jeopardize investigations into the Al-Qaeda network. I say, what? I thought he was supposed to be protecting us. Well, I'm sorry. Protecting us doesn't make for good PR and thus help approval ratings. But what about, you know, like, they made that movie some years ago about smuggling an atomic bomb into the port of Baltimore and blowing up. Aren't they, you know, I mean, it's been, what, 3 years since 9/11? Aren't they protecting our port? No, I'm sorry, they're not. It would cost $7 billion to inspect every piece of cargo going in and out of our ports. And you know, we had to... I realize $7 billion isn't a lot, but it is if you're talking about, you know, $300,000 a year tax cuts for Dick Cheney, $500,000 to $1 million a year tax cuts for George Bush Sr. It's I'm sorry, we just couldn't afford to look at those cargo containers coming into the United States. And, you know, when the polls are going against us, we just have to toss out a CIA asset. I'm sorry, they say. European terrorism analysts acknowledge that the U.S. and its allies are under a real threat by al-Qaeda, but some suggest that the White House is unnecessarily adding to public anxiety with vague and dated intelligence about possible attacks. Some in Western Europe suspect the administration is using fear to improve its chances in the November election. This from the Los Angeles Times yesterday, an article. White House has some terror experts worried. Officials here and overseas say U.S. alerts and release of information could hinder broader investigations. Article by Jeffrey Fleischman. This is just straight up reporting, quoting other folks, right? It causes a problem, says Charles Heyman, editor of Jane's World Armies. There's no doubt about it. The moment you make any announcement, you tell the other side what you know. As a rule of thumb, you should keep quiet about what you know. British security officials are angry over recent U.S. revelations of terrorist threats and arrests. It is time, my friends, to get an administration into office that's more interested in the security of the United States than in their poll numbers. A decision that you can make on November 2nd.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
While many countries are withdrawing citizens from war-torn Iraq, thousands of Nepalese workers are arriving daily with the help of illegal agents. More than 15,000 Nepalese job seekers have been supplied to Iraq via Kuwait-based companies. Many of the workers en route to Iraq have found themselves in the Indian city of Mumbai, where they end up stranded. India has banned its citizens from traveling to Iraq following the abduction of Indians by militants. The Nepalese workers, who are no longer in contact with their agents, are often prevented from leaving the guest houses in Mumbai because they have no money to pay the rent.
Fed up with working 2 years without a contract, the New York City Firefighters Union is seeking arbitration. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, worth an estimated $5 billion, is refusing to give unionists more than a one-time bonus of $1,000 and a 5% raise over 3 years, not keeping up with inflation. In addition, Bloomberg is asking that firefighters work longer hours and have less days off. The Uniformed Firefighters Association has said it will join the thousands of demonstrators picketing the Republican National Convention later this month.
Indigenous oil workers in Nigeria are threatening to strike. Their primary concern is the influx of foreign oil workers, mainly from the U.S. and Europe, operating in the Niger Delta region. In July, workers shut down one oil company, demanding that Nigerian workers be promoted to senior positions that are normally reserved for foreigners. In addition, ExxonMobil has been facing similar strike threats. Workers are charging Exxon with violating expatriate quotas by employing foreigners for jobs that could be done by local workers. With Nigeria being the sixth largest world producer of crude oil, any unrest has a detrimental effect on the cost of gas prices throughout the world.
A repeat of the four-month lockout in California was averted as union employees at Kroger, the nation's largest supermarket chain, voted to accept a new four-year contract on Tuesday. Five stores in Kentucky rejected the offer, which requires employees to start paying health insurance premiums in 2007. But the contract increases wages by 8%, protects the pension plan, and allows workers with seniority to transfer to other stores.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Internal documents from Microsoft reveal that the company has nearly 2,000 workers in India, double the amount they reported having there in June. The company has said that it does not send core technology work overseas, but the documents obtained by Wash Tech suggest otherwise. In addition, the Seattle Times has reported that the company is in the process of building a 42.5-acre facility in India that could employ several thousand workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
For those who whine that the powers that be are just too powerful, so there's no use even bothering with battling the bastards, take note and take heart in not one, not two, but three big court victories by grassroots battlers. First up is a coalition of environmental and citizen groups in the West Virginia area that has been battling the coal industry giants. For years, these groups have been trying to stop the industry from using a devastating, disgusting, and just plain dumb mining practice called mountaintop removal. Instead of tunneling into the mountains to get at the coal, the corporations simply blow up the top third of the mountains, shove the rubble into valleys and streams below, then scoop out the coal. Not only is this unbelievably destructive, but thanks to the coalition's determined push, a federal judge has now ruled that the permitting process that rubber stamps this abomination is illegal. Next, a never-say-die coalition of environmental groups and Nevada officials have stunned the nuclear power giants, who had concocted a cockamamie scheme to bury all of America's high-level nuclear waste in Nevada's Yucca Mountain. The cockamamie part is that this is an earthquake zone. The standards for protecting the public from long-term radiation leaks are absurdly inadequate, and the hot stuff would be hauled for years on trucks and trains running right through our population centers. Now, a federal appeals court has ruled in favor of the coalition, at least slowing this corporate rush to nuclear-powered insanity. Third, a coalition of community radio broadcasters and citizen groups took on the media giants that had gotten lapdog regulators to allow the giants to grow ever larger, shrinking media competition, diversity, and our democracy. But now, a federal appeals court has ruled against the media Goliaths in favor of the local Davids. This is Jim Hightower saying, to connect with all three of these fights, go to my website, jimhightower.com.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George the W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, on Monday there was a troll in the chat room. Some right winger in there throwing around Republican talking points, quoting former Enron lobbyist and now Republican National Committee Chairman Ed Gillespie. It really entertained everybody. So, you know, if you want to be a troll in the chat room, the chat room would welcome it. Just go to TomHartman.com, click on chat, live chat. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum in CompuServe. Log in and push the chat button, and boom, you're there. Spice things up. Gnarlodia says, here comes some trolls. Look out. It's great. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It is Thursday. It is the second hour of our Thursday program, and time to consider what we might not have considered.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Maybe.
You think the biggest threat to the United States is from Al-Qaeda? Well, some scientists are suggesting that it actually might be that the biggest threat is coming from the coast of North Africa, and that it's not human. Scientist Bill McGuire told a news conference, writes Jeremy Lavelle in Reuters. Monday this week, scientist Bill McGuire told a news conference on natural disasters on Monday that sometime in the next few thousand years, now that sounds like we really don't have to worry about it, right? Listen up. The western flank of the Cumbre Vieja volcano on the Canary Islands of La Palma will collapse, sending walls of water 100 meters high, for those who don't do the math quickly, that's roughly 300 feet, racing across the Atlantic. A chunk of the volcano the size of a small island began to slide into the ocean in 1949. There is almost no monitoring of the volcano, giving virtually no chance of any advance warning of another eruption which could trigger the catastrophe. McGuire of the Benfield Grieg Hazard Research Center says the U.S. government must be aware of the threat, but I'm sure that they're not taking it seriously. They certainly should be worried, as should the island states of the Caribbean. Why? Well, because, he says, the giant tidal wave or tsunami triggered by such a collapse would hit the other islands of the Spanish-owned Canaries within an hour and reach the North American coast within 2 hours. I'm sorry, the North African coast within 2 hours. Between 7 and 10 hours later, waves still several tens of meters tall and traveling at the speed of a jet plane would be swamping the Caribbean and crashing into the eastern seaboards of South and North America. McGuire urged the governments of Spain and the United States to fund monitoring the volcanically active La Palma, a project he said could be achieved relatively cheaply. He said the slow collapse, started by an eruption in 1949, would almost certainly be turned catastrophic by another eruption of the volcano, which erupts every 25 to 200 years. The last eruption was 1971. Let's see, it erupts every 25 years, more or less. The last one was 1971. That's, it might be due. And prior to 1949, so it erupted in 71, 49, then we go back to 1712. Maybe it could be a little longer. Wipe out Boston, wipe out New York, wipe out the cities, Savannah, the cities up and down the East Coast. I guess I'd be safe here. We're at about 1,000 feet here in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, where I'm broadcasting live from. But could be. Another thing the Bush administration doesn't want to spend $10 on, ensuring our security, apparently. Not an issue for them. So that our everything you know is wrong for the day. Former U.S. Senator Chick Hecht, H-E-C-H-T, of Nevada is a staunch Republican. Now, why would a staunch Republican, a lifelong staunch Republican, once a year call up John Kerry and tell him how his life is going? I'm not kidding you. This guy has been doing this for years. Once a year, he calls up John Kerry and says, "Hey, John, just wanted to fill you in on how the last year went." Or words to that effect. Why? Well, this is a really fascinating story. It was in the Las Vegas Sun, article by Kirsten Searer. Former U.S. Senator Chuck Hecht of Nevada, staunch Republican, he thanks his lucky stars for Democratic presidential hopeful Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts. On July 12, 1988, writes Searer, Hecht was attending a weekly Republican luncheon when a piece of apple lodged firmly in his throat. Hecht stumbled out of the room, thinking he might vomit, but not wanting to do it in front of his colleagues. Senator Kip Bond, Republican of Missouri, thumped his back, but Hecht quickly passed out in the hallway. See, one of the things you're not supposed to do if somebody has inhaled food is hit them on the back. It may drive it further down in.
But just then, John Kerry stepped off an elevator. Now, Hecht is now unconscious on the floor. He's passed out. You got another Republican, Kit Bond, Republican of Missouri, standing next to him, freaked out, doesn't know what to do. John Kerry runs over to his side, picks up this guy who is unconscious, dying. United States Senator, Republican from Nevada, and gives him the Heimlich maneuver four times. The fourth one does the trick. The piece of apple goes flying out. Heck starts breathing. He comes back to consciousness. He thought he was dying. He thought he was dead. The first thing he sees is the face of John Kerry. That'll imprint you, I guess. The life-saving incident made international news, and Dr. Henry Heimlich, who invented the maneuver in 1974, called Hecht to say that had Kerry intervened just 30 seconds later, Hecht would have been in a vegetative state for the rest of his life. A couple minutes later, he would have been dead. 75-year-old Hecht said on Thursday of this week, "This man gave me my life." Actually, it wasn't Thursday this week. This is a story from back in February, but it's still, you know, still out there. Heck said he was amazed that Kerry acted so quickly. Some people were assuming he was having a heart attack. He knew exactly what to do, he said. But a lot of people know what to do. They just don't size up the situation immediately. The story has a twist of irony, writes Kirsten Searer in the Las Vegas Sun. Hecht was up for re-election that year, and Kerry, who was serving as the chairman of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, had pegged Hecht as one of the most vulnerable Republican seats. Indeed, the Democratic nominee for Hecht's seat, then-Governor Richard Bryan, beat Hecht, who served just one term in office. Hecht's thoughts on this? Kerry saves his life, and then he's the chairman of the Democratic Senatorial Election Campaign, so he's, you know, targets him to be defeated. Hecht says, "Only in America can this happen, where he's working against me to get me defeated and then saves my life." Hecht, who prides himself on having one of the most conservative records in the books during his 6 years in the Senate, said he and his wife Gail see politics as a secondary issue when it comes to John Kerry. "We've had a wonderful life, and it would all have been down the tube," said Hecht, who was about to celebrate his 45th wedding anniversary with his wife. Every year, the Hechts call Kerry's longtime personal secretary, who tracks down Kerry wherever he is. They then recount some of their experiences in the last year. Hecht and his wife thank Kerry for thinking so quickly in the Senate hall that day. And Kerry tells them that their phone call, their annual phone call, is one of his favorites of the year. Hecht says he's so nice and appreciative. This year, Kerry was taking a day's vacation from campaigning, and he told them that he thought his campaign was finally gaining momentum. Some of the Hechts hope so. Both of Hecht's daughters have attended Kerry events, and Gail Hecht hopes to travel to California the next time Kerry's there to voice her support, said her father, the former Republican senator from Nevada, whose life Kerry saved. Still, Hecht points out that he and his wife Gail have given the maximum possible contribution to George Bush's campaign. Hecht, a longtime businessman and banker, served as President George H.W. Bush's ambassador to the Bahamas. Soon after the Iowa caucuses, reports the Las Vegas Sun, a former Los Angeles County Deputy Sheriff, Republican Jim Rassman, stood with Kerry at an event to tell the story of when Kerry saved his life in the jungles of Vietnam. Rassman, a Green Beret, was ambushed along Bay Hap River, but Kerry, who had also been injured in the attack, grabbed Rassman's arm and pulled him to safety. On Wednesday, Roll Call, this is a publication for the members of Congress, wrote a story about Hecht's incident. So far, Kerry hasn't asked Hecht to appear at a campaign event, but Hecht said he would if he were asked. Hecht wouldn't, however, say who he would vote for in November if Kerry wins the Democratic nomination. He says, "Only the good Lord and myself will know how I'm going to vote." Will he vote party loyalty, or will he vote for the guy who saved his life? Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. You know, which really raises a bit of a larger issue, which is the quality of the candidates this year. The nature of the person, John Kerry versus the person, George Bush. And who would we want to be leading the free world? George Bush, for example, says he doesn't read newspapers. He told Fox News anchor Brit Hume in an interview, quote, "What's in the newspapers worth worrying about? I glance at the headlines just to kind of get a flavor of what's moving. I rarely read the stories." Verbatim quote from George W. Bush. John Kerry, on the other hand, says, "I read 4 or 5 papers a day if I can. It depends, obviously, on where I am and what I'm doing. I always pick up the local paper at the hotel I'm staying in, or 2, depending on what the city is. And I try to get the Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, USA Today, papers like that. I try to read as much as I can." The Online Beat by John Nichols notes, "These patterns are similar to most former presidents. Dwight Eisenhower read 9 papers a day. Ronald Reagan was such an avid consumer of newspapers that his ex-wife Jane Wyman complained about his print media obsession. And Presidents George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton were known to go through stacks of newspapers every single day." John Kerry says, "I can't imagine being president and not reading as much as I can about what people are saying. I don't want information varnished by my staff. I don't want it filtered by my staff. I want it the way it is. And I think you get a much better sense of what's going on in the country when you gather information yourself. I think one of the reasons we have some problems today is that we have an administration that's out of touch with the problems of average people. They don't know people are struggling. They don't know what's happening with health care, unemployment. They don't know it, or they don't care. That's their choice, I guess. Would you like a president who reads the paper? Is that a big enough issue? I think it indicates a larger issue, which is curiosity, which is a big one for me. 20 after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Why does the sun go on shining?
Because of nuclear fusion. Because of the gravitational effect of the moon. No, that'll only happen if George Bush gets reelected. Or gets elected. I shouldn't say, you know, you got to stop saying reelected because he was selected the first time. In our chat room, the folks are saying they heard that ad for DennisWeaverNow.com, a website where you can sign up to get on Dennis Weaver's newsletter. And Dennis Weaver's got this new, I've known Dennis Weaver for many years, 25 years. When Louise and I started a community for abused kids in New Hampshire back in 78, he and his wife and several of their children had a country western band, and they did a couple of benefit gigs for us at industry events and raised money, helped raise money for the program. He signed one of our first fundraising letters, and we've gotten to know him fairly well over the years. And so a couple of weeks ago, he asked me to be part of a weekly conference call that he's got, and they were trying to brainstorm ways to get more publicity for the Institute on Ecolonomics. Ecolonomics is this thing that Dennis invented, which is the synthesis of economics and ecology. In other words, how can you have an economy that is intrinsically and inherently sustainable? And they've done some really remarkable work on this thing. And so I said, hey, Dennis, you know, cut a 30-second spot and we'll put it up, no cost to you guys. We'll put it up on our show. And hopefully our listeners will go to DennisWeaverNow.com and sign up. And, sort of a favor to a friend. And anyhow, the folks in our chat room, you ought to get Dennis on the program. And, you know, it's a good idea. I shall. I'll ask him if he'd like to come on. Because this is at the core of what we talk about every single day on this program. And I'm a big supporter of Ecolonomics and have been for a number of years. So, anyhow, George Bush, a no-show at Alabama base. This is something that's worth revisiting. Given the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, none of whom served with John Kerry. I mean, these guys, one of these guys says, I was there, right? What he means is, I was there in Vietnam. He wasn't anywhere near John Kerry. And yet he goes on this TV, and another guy says, he dishonored us, he lied. Right? Well, what they're talking about is the fact that he came back and testified before Congress that there were war crimes and atrocities happening in Vietnam. You ever heard of Lieutenant Calley? And that the war was a mistake. And he said, you know, who wants to be the last man to tell, or to, who is going to tell a man that he has to be the last man to die for a mistake? Well, there's a lot of vets who were super Republicans then and are super Republicans today who have never forgiven him for that. And they are willing to go on national TV and say that because they happened to be in the same country he was, that they were there. And to say that he lied because he said that there were atrocities being committed, and they didn't see that. And it's a very slick juxtaposition. They got this online letter, you know, essentially saying, do you think that Kerry shouldn't have, you know, do you agree with us guys that Kerry trashed Vietnam veterans when he came back? And they got all these signatures of people. Well, you know, yeah, there's a lot of people who were, that was a very polarizing war, a lot of people who were very upset with him for doing that. But at least he was there. I mean, he volunteered three times. He volunteered for active service coming out of college. Then he volunteered for Vietnam. And then he found himself on a slow boat off the coast of Vietnam. He says, yeah, volunteer a third time. Send me in up the rivers on the swift boats. And then it took three injuries to get him out of there. You know, before they said, okay, that's enough. So now we've got two members of the Air National Guard unit that President George W. Bush allegedly served with in 1972. They were looking for him. They couldn't find him. What's this about? And is it going to be picked up by the national media? Or is it going to take a something like the Republican, this giant, well-funded machine out of Texas to make it happen? 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Stubbs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
While many countries are withdrawing citizens from war-torn Iraq, thousands of Nepalese workers are arriving daily with the help of illegal agents. More than 15,000 Nepalese job seekers have been supplied to Iraq via Kuwait-based companies. Many of the workers en route to Iraq have found themselves in the Indian city of Mumbai, where they end up stranded. India has banned its citizens from traveling to Iraq following the abduction of Indians by militants. The Nepalese workers, who are no longer in contact with their agents, are often prevented from leaving the guest houses in Mumbai because they have no money to pay the rent.
Fed up with working 2 years without a contract, the New York City Firefighters Union is seeking arbitration. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, worth an estimated $5 billion, is refusing to give unionists more than a one-time bonus of $1,000 and a 5% raise over 3 years, not keeping up with inflation. In addition, Bloomberg is asking that firefighters work longer hours and have less days off. The Uniformed Firefighters Association has said it will join the thousands of demonstrators picketing the Republican National Convention later this month.
Indigenous oil workers in Nigeria are threatening to strike. Their primary concern is the influx of foreign oil workers, mainly from the U.S. and Europe, operating in the Niger Delta region. In July, workers shut down one oil company, demanding that Nigerian workers be promoted to senior positions that are normally reserved for foreigners. In addition, ExxonMobil has been facing similar strike threats. Workers are charging Exxon with violating expatriate quotas by employing foreigners for jobs that could be done by local workers. With Nigeria being the sixth largest world producer of crude oil, any unrest has a detrimental effect on the cost of gas prices throughout the world.
A repeat of the four-month lockout in California was averted as union employees at Kroger, the nation's largest supermarket chain, voted to accept a new four-year contract on Tuesday. Five stores in Kentucky rejected the offer, which requires employees to start paying health insurance premiums in 2007. But the contract increases wages by 8%, protects the pension plan, and allows workers with seniority to transfer to other stores.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Internal documents from Microsoft reveal that the company has nearly 2,000 workers in India, double the amount they reported having there in June. The company has said that it does not send core technology work overseas, but the documents obtained by Wash Tech suggest otherwise. In addition, the Seattle Times has reported that the company is in the process of building a 42.5-acre facility in India that could employ several thousand workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
You see everything. You see every part. You see all my life. And you love
me. And welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Two members of the Air National Guard unit. In 1972, these guys, Bob Mitz, he's now a FedEx pilot. And and there's another guy with him. I'll have his name in just a moment. Let's deal with Mitz first. Ah, Bishop is the second guy. Lives down in North Carolina. Mitz, a registered Republican, FedEx pilot. In 1972, he was serving in the Alabama Air National Guard. And the word came down that a big shot who was politically connected was being transferred to their unit. And Paul Bishop and Bob Mitz both heard this. They were both officers. In fact, they both ended up lieutenant colonels in the Air National Guard before they retired. Mitz is now 62 years old. He says, I remember that I heard someone was coming to drill with us in Texas, from Texas, and it was implied it was someone with political influence. I was a young bachelor then. I was looking for somebody to prowl around with. But, says Mitz, this is from an article by Jackson Baker in the Memphis Flyer, Memphis, Tennessee newspaper. Mitz lives in Memphis. But, says Mitz, that somebody, better known to the world as the President of the United States today, never showed up at Danley in 1972, nor in 1973, nor at any time that Mintz, a FedEx pilot now and an Eastern Airlines pilot then, when he was in Reserve First Lieutenant at Danley, can remember. And I was looking for him, repeated Mintz, who said that he assumed that Bush changed his mind and went somewhere else to do his substitute drill. Well, the somewhere else could have been Joe's Bar and Grill or Harry's Crack House. I mean, that was during the time when Bush had absolutely vanished. And you know, his campaign, they refused to acknowledge whether or not he took drugs before 1974, so... Interesting times. We'll come back to the story in just a minute. I am informed Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service is on the line, our correspondent in Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Well, there are no committee hearings on Capitol Hill today because we had hearings yesterday and Tuesday, and the hearings will start again hot and heavy on Monday. Just about every committee you could imagine is getting in on this somehow. We've got science and transportation and all kinds having hearings next week. What came out yesterday, though, was that, that there's a little bit of nastiness emerging for the first time. Everything had been all bipartisan and everybody agrees and it's all great. And yet, yesterday, it really started. A couple of things. One is that the Department of Defense doesn't, surprise, surprise, want to give over any of its budget or what it perceives as power to the CIA or to the National Intelligence Director. Mm-hmm. And then the other is that Republicans and Democrats on the committees are starting to be split as to when these reforms should happen. With some Republicans, not all, but some Republicans seeming to say, you know, we need to take our time about this. And then Representative Jane Harman saying, we've taken 3.5 years over this. And she made the point that they passed the Patriot Act like 2 weeks after September the 11th, but the review of passing this has taken 3.5 years. So how can we possibly say that this is a rush to judgment?
Sounds like a flip-flop to me on the part of the Republicans.
It certainly could be seen that way, yeah. Yes.
We're in favor of quick legislation, except when we're not.
Well, that's one of the tricky things. There's going to be things in this legislation that they're not going to like, and there are going to be things that the Democrats don't like, too, because, of course, they are proposing joint committees and some reduction of power, but they're also urging much stronger oversight by Congress. They feel that Congress has not done its job, and they've been very critical of Congress. Congress, or at least the committees, seem to be taking that criticism on board.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to dispute. I mean, this bipartisan commission is probably the most non-divisive. I mean, even the Warren Commission, to this day, people laugh about the Warren Commission. You know, there have been a number of commissions over the years that have looked into things, but it's rare that you get one that is actually and truly bipartisan, you could even argue nonpartisan, and stays with it all the way through and after, you know, that it doesn't devolve into finger-pointing.
And that's exactly what this commission's doing. Every time they testify, and in fact, once they start to go around the country to spread the message, which is what the 9/11 commission members are going to do, it will be Republican and Democrat paired two by two, like animals going onto Noah's Ark.
Yeah, that's a grim thought.
I know, it is really, isn't it?
Okay, interesting. What else is happening in Washington, D.C.?
Well, we heard from the FDA that terrorists might be planning to tamper with drugs, you know, drugs that both the domestic food and drug supply, but also drugs that could be coming in from other countries.
You better not buy your drugs from Canada.
Well, yes, and I mean, you don't have to be that cynical to ask the question, the pharmaceutical companies don't want the drugs coming in from Canada, and now the FDA says it's dangerous too. So I do think even if there is validity to this, that there's going to be a lot of suspicion about it. Certainly here in Washington, D.C.
Well, I got to tell you, Victoria, I live an hour and a half south of the Canadian border. It's a two-hour drive from my home to Montreal. And we have a real problem here in Vermont with dead Canadians. I mean, just all those, they're just dropping like flies all the time. They get near the border, they drop dead, fall over, and we got to cart them away. I mean, it's just all these dangerous pharmaceuticals in Canada are just creating a crisis.
Well, and of course, we hear about it all the time.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's... Thank you for catching that I'm being facetious. You're good. Okay, what else in Washington? Any final point? How's the lockdown?
There's a bit of a fight going on between Vice President Cheney and John Kerry's camps. John Kerry put himself into this position by saying last week when he spoke to the Unity Conference of Minority Journalists, and he made quite a good speech, but he used the word sensitive in connection with fighting the war and the war on terrorism. He used many other words too, but of course Cheney has picked up on the word sensitive, and of course he would, and in a major speech today before veterans, in which he looks very presidential, standing in front of a bunch of uniformed people. He took it out of context basically said that Kerry wants to fight a sensitive war on terror and made him sound absolutely ridiculous.
These guys have they have no soul.
They have no soul, and the Kerry campaign seems to not take any advice.
Yeah. Bill Clinton saying, you know, when you get hit, you have to hit back, and you have to hit back hard. He's so right, and I wish the Kerry campaign would do that. Well, okay. And finally, Victoria Jones, how is Washington, D.C. dealing with the pre-Republican convention lockdown here that we've got?
Well, I noticed when I went to Capitol Hill yesterday that there were even more cops at the barricade that is just 10 yards beyond where we park. But whether that was because they were having some kind of cop confab or not, I don't know. But certainly, you do get the impression walking around that they're taking this very seriously. I mean, as we know, there have been threats of attacks against congressional and other leaders. But in terms of any kind of lockdown going on or any comparison with New York, don't get any impression about that one way or the other.
Yeah. Okay. All righty. Thank you. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, thank you for your daily report here on the
Thank you, Ellen. We'll be back tomorrow.
Okay, great. See you. Talk to you then. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, by the way, if you would like to weigh in on the news of the day. Back to Mr. Mintz and Mr. Bishop. This is a fascinating story. These two guys. Here we've got, on the Republican side, you got a bunch of people who happen to be in the same country as John Kerry, who therefore feel free to go on national television and say, I served with John Kerry, when in fact he never saw them, they never saw him. And say, you know, he lied, and then what they're referring to is Kerry's statements before Congress that there were atrocities going on in Vietnam. but it's presented in a context that you assume that they're talking about his honorable service in Vietnam. You've got this incredible deception going on the conservative side, on the Republican side, let's say. I don't want to slander conservatives quite that badly. And on the other side, that is a side that could be criticizing George Bush for his war record, about the only publication that seems to be covering it is the Memphis Flyer, and that much earlier in this year. And because one of these guys actually lives in Memphis. We've got Bob Mintz and his buddy Paul Bishop, who were in the Alabama National Guard, the Air National Guard, when George Bush, W. Bush, was assigned to it. And they're saying, we were looking for this guy. We wanted to party with him. We wanted to, you know, hook up with some big shot. Thought it would be cool. Wouldn't that be fun? Mintz, who at one time was a registered Republican, confesses to a negative reaction to what he sees as out-and-out dissembling on President Bush's part. See, dissembling is the word you use if you're a newspaper reporter and you don't want to say, lies! Here's a quote from Mintz. He says, you don't do that as an officer. You don't do that as a pilot. You don't do it as an important person, and you don't do it as a citizen. This guy's got a lot of nerve. The actual flying squadron of the 187th, the one that Mintz flew with and Bishop flew with, to which George W. Bush was assigned for 72 and 73, according to Mintz, numbered only 25 to 30 pilots. He says, I have no doubt. I would have heard of him, seen him, whatever. Not only that, the aircraft they were using was slightly different than the F-4 Phantom jets. They were using F-4 Phantom jets, which are slightly different than the planes that Bush had been flying in Texas. And so he would have had to go through a retraining process. Never showed up for it. Mintz says if he did any flying at all on whatever kind of craft, that would have involved a great number of supported personnel. It takes a lot of people to get an airplane in the air, and nobody I can think of remembers him. In fact, you'll recall in 2000, the Bush campaign was actually maybe it was somebody on the other side. Somebody was offered. There was a bounty. Thousands of dollars to anybody who could say, I remember George Bush showing up for his service. And, you know, if you don't show up for less than 30 days, it's called absent without leave. If it's more than 30 days, according to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, it's desertion. And deserters get shot, among other things. He says, I talked to one of my buddies the other day and asked if he could remember Bush at drill at any time. And he said, nah, old George wasn't there and he wasn't at the pit either. The pit, also known, it was the nearby bistro drinking hole called the Snake Pit, is the actual name of it, where they all got together after hours and downed a few beers. I never saw a hide nor hair, Mr. Bush, confirms Bishop. This is another guy who flew with Mintz, who now lives in Goldsboro, North Carolina. He's a veteran of the first Gulf War, Kalita pilot. He has himself flown frequent supply missions into military facilities in Kuwait. In fact, he quips, I saw more of Al Sharpton than I did of George W. Bush. Bishop actually voted for Bush in 2000. But the newspaper notes he is disgruntled both about aspects of the war and about what he sees as Bush's lack of truthfulness about his military record. I think a commander-in-chief who sends his men off to war, says Bishop, ought to be a veteran who has seen the sting of battle. Paul Bishop. He says, it bothered me that he wouldn't fess up and say, okay, guys, I cut out when the rest of you did your time. He shouldn't have to dance around the subject. I take great exception to that. I spent 39 years defending my country. Bishop is now 65 years old. He was also a pilot for Eastern at the time in 1972. He commuted from Atlanta, a two-hour drive away, retired as a full colonel. Would he consider voting for the president's reelection? Bishop? He says, nah, this goes to an integrity issue. I like either John Kerry or John Edwards better. Integrity. Here you got John Kerry, who saved the life of a Republican, the Republican senator from Nevada, with a Heimlich maneuver, and the guy's laying on the floor, when everybody else thought it was a heart attack, he immediately makes a decision. Compared to a guy who is told, Mr. President, the United States is under attack, and sits there for 7 long minutes, chewing the inside of his cheek, while children are reading My Pet Goat to him. I think that, you know, we've got a fairly clear choice here. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Phil in Tampa, Florida on the line. Hey, Phil, what's up?
Hi. You know, I think everybody who listens to the show obviously doesn't, you know, wants to see John Kerry elected.
Not everybody.
Well, if they're listening, mostly. I want to make a suggestion to people and how they can help, because that's what's really going to make a difference. Everybody who moves, and most local newspapers tell you what property has sold and what it sold for and what the address is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And all of these people have to re-register to vote. Okay, take some time out of your day. Go get some voter registration cards at the Registrar of Voters. Go there with a clipboard with a Kerry sticker on it. And then after these people have moved in, knock on their door. Say, hi, I am basically working for Kerry's reelection, and I notice you guys need to register to vote now that you've moved into this new home. And I'm here to help you. Now, if they say I'm a Bush supporter, say I'm sorry and walk away.
But
the point is,
what if they say I'm a Bush? You know, if I was doing that and they said I'm a Bush supporter, I would still say, fine, you know, let's register you to vote.
Well, I wouldn't.
I would also try and talk them out of it.
The other thing, number two, the other thing you can do is to spend $5 and go to Office Depot, buy some 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper that have stickum on the back of it. Peel off?
Got about 5 seconds, Phil.
All right, and just print on your computer 1,000 times, vote for Kerry, save the middle class. Print that out on your computer, cut them into little boxes, and paste them on everything you see at the gas station, the grocery store, you name it.
Okay, and be careful you don't get arrested for vandalism. It's a start. Phil, thanks for the call. 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pollution might be driving up the cost of health care. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Healthcare costs are soaring, driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
About 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of decades. Not all of that's related to air pollution, but a lot is related to air pollution. And that's very time-consuming and expensive medications, long-term health effects that we pay for every day.
Bransford says a number of studies show a clear link between childhood asthma and air quality. He says we need to clean up power plants, diesel engines, and other sources of air pollution.
We can deal with them cost-effectively so that we not only can minimize the danger to public health, but we can do it in a way that saves money for businesses, ultimately saves money for individuals who have to deal with health care and taking their children to emergency rooms and physicians and buying medications for asthma.
Bransford advocates a comprehensive approach to cleaning up emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term, but on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Goodbye, George. George, goodbye, goodbye.
Oh, one can hope.
You gotta go. Too bad. Goodbye, goodbye.
Evelyn Pringle has started a new group, Citizens for Honest Fighter Pilots. Citizens for Honest Fighter Pilots hereby calls on George W. Bush to explain his whereabouts and activities for the period of time he was AWOL. I would say he was a deserter. And for him to repay the $250,000 in tax money wasted on his fighter pilot training. She notes that not one of the 700 members at the Alabama unit where he claims he served remembers seeing him at all in 2 years. The year of 72 or the year of 73, he was just nowhere to be seen. And this is a story that it's time. They have put this on the table. These guys, they have said, okay, somebody's military service is an issue in the 2004 election, you know, with these so-called Swift Vote Veterans for Truth who are all, as far as I can tell, liars, or at least lying by, you know, is it a lie when somebody says, I was there and what they actually mean was, I was there in Vietnam, not I was there on the boat with him. But everybody assumes that what they're saying is, I was there on the boat with him. Even if they didn't know him, they never saw him. I was there. Is that lying? I'll let you decide. But anyhow, for its own political purposes, last year, Valerie Plame got outed. Now we got another CIA agent, or CIA asset, Khan, this guy who was outed in Pakistan last week, a couple weeks ago, by the Bush administration in order to justify their orange terror alert. And they're into, let's tell the truth, let's put the information up, or at least they claim to be. So how about telling the truth about what happened, where George W. was when he was supposed to be serving his country, when John Kerry was getting shot at? Where was George W.? These guys are just counting on the ignorance or laziness of mainstream reporters, I'll tell you. And maybe they'll be satisfied. Paul Lukasiak of Philadelphia, though, called him on it. He went through this document dump that Karl Rove put out recently. And he says he found proof Bush was not there. Let's see him challenge him. It's the Tom Hartman Program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
While many countries are withdrawing citizens from war-torn Iraq, thousands of Nepalese workers are arriving daily with the help of illegal agents. More than 15,000 Nepalese job seekers have been supplied to Iraq via Kuwait-based companies. Many of the workers en route to Iraq have found themselves in the Indian city of Mumbai, where they end up stranded. India has banned its citizens from traveling to Iraq following the abduction of Indians by militants. The Nepalese workers, who are no longer in contact with their agents, are often prevented from leaving the guest houses in Mumbai because they have no money to pay the rent.
Fed up with working 2 years without a contract, the New York City Firefighters Union is seeking arbitration. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, worth an estimated $5 billion, is refusing to give unionists more than a one-time bonus of $1,000 and a 5% raise over 3 years, not keeping up with inflation. In addition, Bloomberg is asking that firefighters work longer hours and have less days off. The Uniformed Firefighters Association has said it will join the thousands of demonstrators picketing the Republican National Convention later this month.
Indigenous oil workers in Nigeria are threatening to strike. Their primary concern is the influx of foreign oil workers, mainly from the U.S. and Europe, operating in the Niger Delta region. In July, workers shut down one oil company, demanding that Nigerian workers be promoted to senior positions that are normally reserved for foreigners. In addition, ExxonMobil has been facing similar strike threats. Workers are charging Exxon with violating expatriate quotas by employing foreigners for jobs that could be done by local workers. With Nigeria being the sixth largest world producer of crude oil, any unrest has a detrimental effect on the cost of gas prices throughout the world.
A repeat of the four-month lockout in California was averted as union employees at Kroger, the nation's largest supermarket chain, voted to accept a new four-year contract on Tuesday. Five stores in Kentucky rejected the offer, which requires employees to start paying health insurance premiums in 2007. But the contract increases wages by 8%, protects the pension plan, and allows workers with seniority to transfer to other stores.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Internal documents from Microsoft reveal that the company has nearly 2,000 workers in India, double the amount they reported having there in June. The company has said that it does not send core technology work overseas, but the documents obtained by Wash Tech suggest otherwise. In addition, the Seattle Times has reported that the company is in the process of building a 42.5-acre facility in India that could employ several thousand workers.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Time for another Gooberhead Awards, presented periodically to those in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles per hour, but who forgot to put their brains in gear. Today, I've got a whole nest of goobers for you, all of whom are nesting in the fraud-ridden Pentagon, except when they fly that coop to feather their nest with top jobs at Lockheed, Boeing, Halliburton, and other corporations that pocket billions in bloated Pentagon contracts. The scam of such goobers is to work a while at the Pentagon, gain insider knowledge and contacts, then peddle their insider connections to corporations wanting more fat contracts from us taxpayers. Take Pete Aldridge, who has made a career of spinning in and out of the revolving door between the Pentagon and military contractors. He was Secretary of the Air Force, then, whoosh, whoosh, he left to become President of Air Force contractor McDonnell Douglas. Then, whoosh, whoosh, George W. brought him back inside to be in charge of all Pentagon purchases. Last year, whoosh, whoosh, he left again, this time to become a highly paid board member at Lockheed. But just before leaving, he personally approved a $3 billion contract for 20 jet fighters to be made by, you guessed it, Lockheed. Even while Pete's on Lockheed's payroll, whoosh, whoosh, Bush named him chairman of a Space Exploration Commission. Pete's commission recently called for privatizing NASA. Guess what corporation stands to gain the most from such a move? Bingo, if you said Lockheed. About his glaring conflicts of interest, Pete simply declares that he's in compliance with current ethics laws. But of course, these laws are shams, written by lobbyists for goobers like Pete. Legal isn't the same as moral. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about this nest of goobers, call the Project on Government Oversight, 202-347-1122.
Hi, this is Doug Dupuy for SelectQuote, and I just called
Cheryl Payne,
one of SelectQuote's licensed agents.
Hi, Mr. Dupuy.
Hi, Cheryl. Why buy term life insurance through SelectQuote instead of somebody else?
Well, Mr. Dupuy, about 2 out of 3 people have health or lifestyle issues. Could be high blood pressure, skydiving. Now, depending on what insurance company you choose, you could overpay hundreds of dollars a year.
Well, where does SelectQuote come in?
SelectQuote's a real matchmaker. We impartially shop the pick of America's top life insurers to match you with your best buy.
Got an example?
Sure. I just matched a man 40 years old who takes cholesterol medication with a $500,000 policy for under $22 a month.
Quite a match, Cheryl. Why not let SelectQuote match you with your best buy? Just call 1-800-772-8300. That's 1-800-772-8300. Or log on to SelectQuote.com.
Examples: First Colony Preferred, Best Colony, 10-year term, policy form 1420 and 1421 et al. Underwritten by First Colony Life Insurance Company, a GE Financial Assurance Company, Lynchburg, Virginia. Policy subject to underwriting approval, available in most states.
Call calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. The third hour of our program here, Thursday, the 12th of August. 82 days to regime change. Speaking of regime change, wasn't that supposed to happen in 2000? I mean, well, you could say, okay, it went from the Democrats to the Republicans, but wasn't it supposed to be that, I mean, didn't we all believe that as American citizens we had a right to vote? I don't know about you. I was rather surprised when the Supreme Court in the Bush v. Gore decision came back and said there is no right to vote enshrined in the Constitution for president. And in point of fact, I went back and read the Constitution. They were right. You know, there's the Electoral College. But nonetheless, it was a bit of a wake-up call. And here we have this now, in the last 2 weeks, virtually every major right-wing talk show host on the air, as well documented by the Center for American Progress, has said multiple times, and in addition, the commentators on Fox News have said, no matter how you figure it, words to this effect, no matter how you figure it, no matter how you calculate it, no matter what, George Bush won Florida, period, end of discussion. Democrats should get over it. And into the midst of this comes a book called The Road to Illegitimacy, One Reporter's Travels Through the 2000 Florida Vote Recount. Mark Danner, the author of this book. It's a marvelous little book. It's the kind of book that you can read in an afternoon. It's, let's see here. It's only about 80 pages long. Is that right? Or is that 60 pages? Yeah, 60 pages. And Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks a lot, Tom. It's good to be here.
Great to have you here. Mark is a staff writer at The New Yorker, a longtime contributor to New York Review of Books. And I liked your old Enoch, assuming I'm pronouncing it correctly, story. Tell us about that.
Well, old Enoch was described to me by a woman named Babs Monpetit, who is the was the election supervisor for a county in the north of Florida. It's the single Union County up in what's called the Iron Triangle. They call it the Iron Triangle because the main industry in that part of Florida is prisons. It used to be lumber and agriculture. Now it's prisons, and so that's where the state's criminals go. It's a very isolated place, but it has the singular distinction of being the single one of Florida's 67 counties that still use paper ballots. So if you go up there, you can look at the election not as something that was had problems because of technical reasons, because of, you know, the punch card ballots or optical scans or anything else. This is a place where people just get a piece of paper with names on it, and they put an X with a pencil next to the name they want for president.
They're doing it. They're doing it the same way that Germany does it to this day. That most of Canada does it. That many. Actually, I haven't done a survey, but many European countries I know simply use paper and pencil, and
exactly.
And then they have civil servants who tabulate the vote over the course of the next day or so, with observers from the various political parties looking on, and it's a completely obvious, transparent process. Doesn't cost a penny extra because you just have these people not do their normal job for a day or two in the bureaucracy, and the overseers are volunteers, and you get the results. And in fact, in Germany, they do exit polling. The news organizations do exit polling, and the exit polls, so that they can know what the vote was that very night. The exit polls are always within a tenth. They've never been more than 0.1% off.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in the United States, our exit polls were always very, very accurate up until the '96 election, when they started going screwy in those states that had electronic voting machines. So bad that in the 2000 election, they had to just dump some of the results. And in the 2002 elections, the polling exit polling company that was a consortium of the news organizations never released their results and went out of business.
Yes, that's right. Complete meltdown.
Yeah. So anyhow, we've got the situation in northern Florida. You're telling us the story. It's they use paper.
Well,
ballots.
The interesting thing is, you know, I was eager to go there because I thought, you know, we've got all these questions about the machines and how the machines have malfunctioned and so on. Union County seems to be the one place where that's not an issue at all. So I got in my car and I drove up there and saw the recount of those ballots. Mm-hmm. And a couple of interesting things. The first is that the rate of discard of ballots that weren't counted there was double the rate in the rest of the state, which was already high. It was 6% in Union County. And Bab Monpetit was the election supervisor there who talked to me about a fellow named Old Enoch. She said to me, now, there was Old Enoch, and Old Enoch, he's a nice black man, you know, and he had a terrible time. He came in here the first time, he marked one ballot, but he wasn't happy with that, so he threw it away, and he wandered off, and then he came back again. He marked another, but he was suffering. He had the pressure on him, you know. And I said, Enoch, you can only get one more. You know, the law says you only have but three ballots. But he was suffering, and he had the pressure on him, and he wanted to do right, but he didn't know what to do. This is Babs Monpetit telling me the story. And the fact is that I was trying to use Old Enoch to demonstrate that there are a lot of people who have no involvement in politics whatever. They don't watch political shows. They're not interested in what the politicians are saying. Their only political involvement really is on Election Day. And when you look at some of these ballots, as I did in Union County, you see a lot of people are completely detached from the process, and they're very confused by anything smacking of complications. And the Florida ballot in November 2000 had 10 names on it for president. As we know from Palm Beach and from Duval County, several of the way the election supervisors had arranged these names made them very confusing. And people like Old Enoch became extremely confused and ended up marking several names for president, and their ballots were not counted, even in those cases where it was pretty obvious who they really wanted to vote for. And there were thousands and thousands of ballots discarded where people, for example, marked Al Gore, and then at the bottom where it said write in your candidate, meaning if you didn't want, you know, one of the listed names, you could write in another, they would write in Al Gore. Now, all of those ballots, even though it was absolutely obvious that Al Gore was the person they wanted to vote for, were discarded.
Now, Mark,
which is one of the reasons why, if they were included, the later recounts found, Al Gore would have won.
Yeah, now, Mark, you've raised two issues here. One is voters who are relatively incompetent as voters. You know,
That's right.
Selecting three or four people for president, I don't think that any of those things should be counted. Do you?
Well, I think that is the key question, Tom, and I would answer it this way. If you're voting for several different people, there's obviously no way the law can tell what your intent was.
Right.
On the other hand, if you have voted in the way I just described, putting an X next to Al Gore's name, for example, and then where it says write in candidate, writing Al Gore's name.
Yeah, it's a whole different
thing. It's absolutely clear what your intent was. And
right.
According to Florida law, the intent of the voter is supposed to determine who gets the vote. So that those ballots, in a fair recount, would have been counted for Al Gore. And in fact, very few of them were.
Those were called overvotes.
In most of these counties, they weren't recounted.
Those were referred to as overvotes. Is that not correct?
Exactly,
yeah.
Overvotes. And those would have clearly put Al Gore over the top if they'd been included, as they should have been.
Yeah. Now, even if they weren't included, though, I remember reading the New York Times, with great dismay. I mean, this was just a few weeks after 9/11, as I recall, four weeks after 9/11. The article, which the headline of it essentially said, no matter what, George Bush won in Florida. And then you read the article and you get down to like the 13th or 17th paragraph or something, and it says, if there had been a statewide recount of the vote, no matter what criteria you use, whether you count overvotes or undervotes, or you don't count any of the overvotes, no matter what criteria you use, no matter how you decide to do that statewide count, Al Gore won. And I'm reading that going, why is this not the first paragraph? Why is this not the headline? And of course, well, you can tell us the reason why. You're the reporter. You were there.
Well, it's true that the headline on that story was, I've got it here, study of disputed Florida ballots finds justices did not cast the deciding vote. That was the Times headline, which is a rather
disingenuous,
obtuse and odd headline.
Yeah.
And you're quite right, they very much buried the lead. And you see, you know, how newspapers are indeed political instruments, if any of your listeners had had any doubt, that particular headline and the way the story was played would have convinced them otherwise, I think. I mean, you were in the shadow of 9/11. The major organs of the press in this country, which had started this so-called media recount and had spent a lot of money on it, found themselves with the results at a time when they essentially didn't want to have them. The
right.
President was suddenly a war president. Everybody was essentially mouthing a lot of patriotic rhetoric. And they found themselves with these results on their hands, which they delayed in publishing several weeks, and then finally brought out, as you say, in stories that were really quite confusing and quite misleading. The fact is that on a broad statewide basis, if you'd had a recount of the state, it's pretty much certain that Al Gore won that election. The odd thing, ironic thing, I guess, is that the one situation in which Gore may well have lost to Bush was if there had simply been a recount of the four South Florida counties that Gore himself had wanted.
Right.
If those only had been recounted,
but
Bush
then,
may well
but then
have
he changes
added to his lead.
Yeah, but then he changes too, and he started saying count every vote, and that was the point.
That's
at
right.
which, that was the point at which George Bush sued him at the Supreme Court to stop the count, and so anyway.
That's exactly true. But you know, the fact, the general point is that you know the press started this very broad, very expensive recount at a time when it seemed to be a very big story, and then found themselves with the results at a time when they really didn't want them after 9/11, so that this thing kind of, you know, it went away, and
yeah.
they really buried the result.
And the lie has taken on a life of its own. We're talking to Mark Danner, the author of The Road to Illegitimacy, One Reporter's Travels Through the 2000 Florida Vote Recount. Mark, we got about a minute left. Didn't the New York Times at one point say to a reporter when asked why did you bury the lead in that story that they did it because they thought it was best for the country not to have the legitimacy of the president questioned after 9/11?
Boy, I don't remember them saying that explicitly. I'd love to have that quote if it's true. I think that
I thought it was an interview with Hal Raines.
Thinking.
Yeah, my recollection. I don't have the paper. I thought that somebody had interviewed Hal Raines for a print publication, and he had said something to that effect. But it's something
yeah.
worth tracking down. In the last few seconds we have here, what was the most interesting thing for you in researching this book, The Road to Illegitimacy?
Well, one was just how intricate and strange the history of elections actually is, where you find these different traditions and where you find people like old Enoch who essentially voting is their only participation in the political processes at all.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to think that on that one day, election day, you have, you're going to have as close as you can get all Americans, and of course it isn't all, but
yeah.
as close as you'll get participating in politics on the same day.
Yeah, and we have therefore an imperative, a moral imperative, to make it as straightforward and simple as possible. Mark Danner, the author of The Road to Illegitimacy, great little book, One Reporter's Travels Through the 2000 Florida Vote Recount. Mark, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told. If you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Stubbs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And the time is 82 days to regime change. Our program today brought to you by the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research, www.cascr.org. Check them out. A futurist, Benjamin Krim. 1-888-242-8272 for free audio tape. And Small Dog Electronics for all things Macintosh, 1-800-511-MAX, 511-MACS. As well as In These Times and the Progressive, other sponsors of our program. Well, the Kansas City Star reports that Eli Lilly, GlaxoSmithKline, and Pfizer are at the forefront of the fight against reimportation of pharmaceuticals. Did you see this yesterday? I was watching something on TV, and something that I, for years, we actually, for decades, we didn't have a TV in our house. So it's every now and then I get fascinated by it. It's culture shock almost. And we started doing this when I started doing the program. We got a TV in here. And anyhow, I'm watching this commercial. And here's Lance Armstrong going on and on about how GlaxoSmithKline saved his life with their new drug and how much money they're spending on research. And I'm thinking, you know, these spots are a couple $100,000 a minute. Why are they spending all this money on this spot? They're not trying to sell me their drugs. They're not saying, therefore, go down to the drugstore and ask for only the GlaxoSmithKline version of blah blah. Well, you don't have that kind of choice. Multiple drug companies don't make the same drug. Somebody's got a patent, that's their drug. What's going on? Why are they spending all this money promoting the fact that they're doing research instead of using that money for research?
Well, it turns out it all has to do with politics. And in fact, these three companies, according to the Kansas City Star, Eli Lilly, GlaxoSmithKline, and Pfizer, are all trying to restrict supplies of medicine to keep prices high. Now, this causes me to wonder, could that be why we're seeing so many ads for the pharmaceutical companies that aren't actually selling product? Because they're then transferring money to the TV organizations. And now that news is no longer a separate division, but is part of the entertainment division of all the large networks and even the cable companies, and thus responsive and responsible to the bottom line. Let's not do an expose on these guys, you would think, maybe. Pfizer, for example, this is from the Center for American Progress today, the Progress Report. Pfizer, for example, has restricted supplies of the cholesterol drug Lipitor. This is restricting them to Canada, so it can't be reimported. Because, as one industry spokesman said, the industry, quote, must protect the huge investment they make developing new drugs. End quote. What he didn't say was that Lipitor and many other medicines now being held hostage were originally developed with billions of dollars in taxpayer money. And, of course, it's just a coincidence that the CEO of Pfizer is a Bush pioneer, one of George Bush's major fundraisers. The company has given the Republican National Committee more than $2.5 million in soft money since Bush became president, or since 2000. Eli Lilly executives have given the Bush campaign more than $53,000, and the company has given the RNC more than $1.4 million in soft money since 2000. And Glaxo executives have given the Bush campaign more than $23,000, while the company has given the RNC more than $1.4 million in soft money since 2000. So if you're wondering why the Republican-controlled House and the Republican-controlled Senate would send to the Republican president a bill to be enthusiastically signed, which says it's against the law for the government to negotiate bulk purchases on drugs. Well, they can continue to do it for the military. They can continue to do it for veterans' hospitals. They can continue to do it for the House and Senate and for the White House if Dick Cheney needs some drugs, but they can't do it if you're on Medicare. If you're wondering why those drug prices are now so very, very high, wonder no longer. The best politicians money can buy. The Republican and, to some extent, the Democratic Party. There you go. To a large extent, actually. 29 minutes past the hour.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
While many countries are withdrawing citizens from war-torn Iraq, thousands of Nepalese workers are arriving daily with the help of illegal agents. More than 15,000 Nepalese job seekers have been supplied to Iraq via Kuwait-based companies. Many of the workers en route to Iraq have found themselves in the Indian city of Mumbai, where they end up stranded. India has banned its citizens from traveling to Iraq following the abduction of Indians by militants. The Nepalese workers, who are no longer in contact with their agents, are often prevented from leaving the guest houses in Mumbai because they have no money to pay the rent.
Fed up with working 2 years without a contract, the New York City Firefighters Union is seeking arbitration. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, worth an estimated $5 billion, is refusing to give unionists more than a one-time bonus of $1,000 and a 5% raise over 3 years, not keeping up with inflation. In addition, Bloomberg is asking that firefighters work longer hours and have less days off. The Uniformed Firefighters Association has said it will join the thousands of demonstrators picketing the Republican National Convention later this month.
Indigenous oil workers in Nigeria are threatening to strike. Their primary concern is the influx of foreign oil workers, mainly from the U.S. and Europe, operating in the Niger Delta region. In July, workers shut down one oil company, demanding that Nigerian workers be promoted to senior positions that are normally reserved for foreigners. In addition, ExxonMobil has been facing similar strike threats. Workers are charging Exxon with violating expatriate quotas by employing foreigners for jobs that could be done by local workers. With Nigeria being the sixth largest world producer of crude oil, any unrest has a detrimental effect on the cost of gas prices throughout the world.
A repeat of the four-month lockout in California was averted as union employees at Kroger, the nation's largest supermarket chain, voted to accept a new four-year contract on Tuesday. Five stores in Kentucky rejected the offer, which requires employees to start paying health insurance premiums in 2007. But the contract increases wages by 8%, protects the pension plan, and allows workers with seniority to transfer to other stores.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Internal documents from Microsoft reveal that the company has nearly 2,000 workers in India, double the amount they reported having there in June. The company has said that it does not send core technology work overseas, but the documents obtained by Wash Tech suggest otherwise. In addition, the Seattle Times has reported that the company is in the process of building a 42.5-acre facility in India that could employ several thousand workers.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Start me up.
And welcome back. As we talked about in the previous hour, this chart has been published, this graph. Fascinating. You can find a link to it. It's on the web. You can find a link to it. You go to tomhartman.com, go to our message boards, and I just posted the message this afternoon with links to it, where there's a Jason blog. This blogger has gone through and taken Bush's poll numbers from almost a dozen different sources and headlines from a bunch of different news agencies and a list of all the terror alerts we've had in the United States in the last few years. He actually goes back before 9/11 just to track the whole thing out through the entire Bush administration. And sure enough, what Howard Dean said is actually accurate. Every time Bush's poll numbers drop, they issue a terror alert, and his poll numbers shoot back up again. And it's right there. You can see it. It's a chart. It's a graph. It's visual, right, along with the whole description of it, how it works. It's just absolutely amazing. He starts to slide in the polls down, 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 down. Bad headlines about him and Cheney, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, terror alert. And he goes, boing! Back up again. And then he starts to slide down, 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 down. Terror alert. Boing! Back up again. Down, 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 down. Terror alert. Boing! Back. It's incredible. And, well, they tried it again yesterday. Now, you'll recall, yesterday was when John Kerry came out and said the Bush administration should approve a bipartisan plan. They had Republicans in on this thing. To let senior citizens buy prescription drugs, pharmaceuticals from Canada. Now, the Bush administration, of course, is strongly opposed to that because of all those dead Canadians. You know, we've got a terrible problem here in Vermont with dead Canadians falling over the border into our state, and then we got to pay for burials because the pharmaceuticals there are so dangerous. Need to protect Americans from them. Or at least that's the Bush administration's position. So John Kerry and a bunch of senators from, including many in the Republican Party, said, let's make it legal. And also yesterday, the Republican governor of Vermont, Jim Douglas, this I am broadcasting, as I speak, live from high up in the Green Mountains in the People's Republic of Vermont. Here I am, right here in central Vermont, where it is raining, by the way. It seems like it has rained every day this summer. Anyhow, you've got two bits of very serious bad news that would tend to erode Bush's popularity. I mean, this is an issue that they don't want raised. And even a Republican governor coming out and challenging George W. Bush. Now, there's the story, and there's the story behind the story, by the way, on that. Jim Douglas said the claims on which they, the Bush administration, have based this denial of the Vermont reimportation program are, in our view, unsubstantiated, and we have no choice but to pursue any and all legal remedies. The state of Vermont now, with a Republican governor, is suing the Bush administration, suing the government, saying, you know, we should be able to buy drugs from Canada if we want. It was Bernie Sanders, our congressman, who's on this program, the first hour of this program, every Friday. It was Bernie Sanders who first organized busloads of senior citizens to go up to Canada to buy their pharmaceuticals. This was years ago. This was like 3 or 4 years ago. And it's just, you can see them. They go by, these busloads of senior citizens, off to Montreal. It's only 2 hours from here. The Bush administration says, you can't do that. It's illegal. We're going to start confiscating the drugs at the border. We're going to bust these people. It's a crime. You can't do it. And now here's the other side of the story, the Vermont end of it, which is not being reported nationally. Our governor is a good Republican. He was elected by a minority of the voters of the state because there is a very strong progressive party here in Vermont. It's called the Progressive Party. It plays the role that the Greens play in virtually every other state. The Green Party is pretty insignificant in Vermont. But the Progressive Party took over 20% of the vote in the election of 2000 for governor and lieutenant governor. So we've got a situation where the lieutenant governor only got 41% of the vote, the Republican, and the governor only got 45% of the vote. The majority of Vermont voters voted for either the Democrat or the Progressive. But because there was a third-party candidate on the ticket, the Progressive, they split the ticket, and the Republicans ended up in charge. And this guy, Jim Douglas, has been, pretty solidly in George Bush's camp all along. And pretty much doing nothing except, talking out in favor of tax cuts and helping grease legislation through the House and Senate here in Vermont that would benefit corporate entities and corporate powers. I mean, he's been doing the Republican thing. And then Peter Clavelle, who's the mayor of Burlington, the biggest city in Vermont, he's the guy who's going to run against Jim Douglas, the Republican. Clavelle, the Democrat. And it looks like the Progressives are not going to field a candidate this year. Like they learned from last year, and they're actually participating. Clavelle is so left that a lot of Democrats are scared by him. The newspapers refer to him as Mayor Moonbeam, right? So I think he's a great guy, but in any case. So Clavelle starts running these ads on TV. They started about 2 weeks ago. And in the ad on TV, Clavelle is driving his car, and he's behind a car. He's behind this, he's driving a Prius, a hybrid car. And he's behind this giant Lincoln Town Car. And it's covered with Bush-Douglas bumper stickers, George Bush and Jim Douglas, the governor of Vermont. And Clavelle says, Douglas won't get out of the way and let people import drugs from Canada until George Bush tells him he can't. And Clavelle is actually on his website making it possible for people to buy drugs directly from Canada on his website, on the Democratic candidate for governor from Vermont. So after a week or two of this, Douglas clearly has seen his poll numbers dropping here in Vermont. And so he comes out and goes up against the Bush administration on this issue. Now, it was a cynical political ploy here in this state. He's changed his position. He's flip-flopped. And he did it because he was getting beat up by the Democrat. That's the part that you're not going to read in the mainstream press. But nonetheless, he's doing it. And so here you've got, at a national level, you got the Republicans being beat up not only by Democrats and Republicans in the Senate, not only by John Kerry yesterday, but even by the Republican governor of Vermont. So what do? Raise the terror alert! It's time for a new terror alert! Yes, indeed, folks, the Food and Drug Administration. The commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, Lester Crawford, comes out and says, imported prescription drugs are now the top weapon that Al-Qaeda plans to use to attack America. I beg your pardon? No, seriously. Imported drugs. If you're a senior citizen and you can't afford to pay $200 for that prescription for your medication, and you can buy that same pharmaceutical from Canada for $35, you are aiding terrorists. Not only that, you might be a victim of them. Well, this sort of caught the folks at the Department of Homeland Security by surprise. They, of course, being the ones who are in charge of issuing terror alerts and scaring Americans. For partisan political purposes, Tom Ridge, his last one, comes out and says, you know, be afraid, be very afraid. By the way, we're not going to tell you this information is 4 years old. Just be afraid. And then he goes on to say, and we're able to learn these things. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but something. Because of the leadership of President George W. Bush on the war on terrorism. Yeah. Yeah, this guy, it's been 3 years, 1,074 days since 9/11, and he still hasn't bothered to inspect what's coming into our ports. That's real leadership. But anyhow, the Food and Drug Administration comes along and says, yeah, we've got to do the terror alert. You can't. As the Center for American Progress reports, the FDA announcement was so cynical, baseless, and transparent that the Department of Homeland Security immediately issued a statement saying, quote, we have no specific information now about any Al-Qaeda threats to our food or drug supply, end quote. I mean, can't you just see it? Osama sitting in a cave over there, you know, with his dialysis machine next to him in Pakistan or in Afghanistan. Now that we only control two cities in all of Afghanistan, the warlords and the Taliban are back and they're in charge. So he could be anywhere. After being airlifted out of Tora Bora. Remember that story. And he's sitting around with his guys and he says, oh, I know how to really get these Americans. We'll go to Canada and we'll sneak into the pharmacies and we'll have some pills made that look just like, you know, fill in the blank. You want something that most Americans are taking, right? That look just like Prozac. 1 in 10 Americans is on some form of psychotropic medication right now. Psychologically active medication. So he says, okay, we're going to make phony Prozac pills and actually fill them with anthrax or cyanide or something. And all his guys around him are going, yeah, cool, good idea, Osama. He says, I want you to go to Germany and buy one of those pill-making machines and go to Canada and get some pills so we can see what they look like and hire a pharmaceutical lab guy, or maybe you need to just take him hostage, who can tell you how to make the machine work. And then we'll put them in the prescription bottles there in Canada, so when these American senior citizens buy their pharmaceuticals, they'll think they're getting Prozac, but actually, they're getting cyanide. Can't you just see it? I mean, it's so obvious to the Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. Good old Lester Crawford, he's got this thing figured out. Yesterday's perfectly timed terror announcement by the FDA comes on the heels of other examples of the Bush administration using the fear of terrorism for its own political gain, notes David Sirota. Last week, the administration raised the terror alert in 3 states just after the Democratic National Convention, even though it later revealed it was basing the move on old information and had outed its own Al-Qaeda intelligence source in the process. A week before, the administration announced the capture of a top Al-Qaeda suspect hours before Kerry's keynote address to the Democratic National Convention. Pakistani intelligence sources had previously said the administration was pressuring them to come up with an arrest during the convention. And it soon came out that the administration specifically delayed the announcement of the capture for 5 days so that they could announce it on the day of John Kerry's speech. What a surprise. What an absolute mind-boggling surprise. In May, the very same week the president's approval ratings hit an all-time low, Attorney General John Ashcroft held a dramatic press conference warning Americans about the general threat of terrorism. When they were questioned, he actually later said, well, there is no real new intelligence. But that press conference kicked George Bush's approval ratings back up. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to weigh in on these issues of our day. Helen in West Virginia is on the line. Hey, Helen, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Howdy. Well, you're on a roll.
Yeah, it doesn't take much. I mean, this is over the top.
I didn't want to interrupt you. I've just been listening to you so much. Pertaining to the drugs and everything, why isn't anyone talking about the drugs that Bush has taken?
Well, because that hasn't been corroborated. Capitol Hill Blue is the source of the story that Bush is on psychoactive medication, and nobody else has gone near that, even folks on the left. So, you know, it is... If Bush is on pharmaceuticals being prescribed by his private doctor, it's unlikely we'll ever find out about it. We only found out that his father was taking Halcyon, which is in the Valium family. It's a benzodiazepine drug, mm-hmm. When he was in Japan and threw up in the lap of the prime minister. Remember during the first Bush administration?
Right.
And then, you know, they said, well, he's been on Halcyon, and that may have something to do with it. It's a sleeping pill.
Have you heard of Dr. Justin Frank?
Yeah, and his book, Bush on the Couch. But he's, you know, he's diagnosing from a distance. He's saying, you know, everything that I see, which is, by the way, there's a long history of this being done. And, in fact, it's really interesting, particularly with historical figures. Very often you get an actually, speaking as a psychotherapist here, you get a more accurate view of somebody in a historical context than you do if you're actually sitting across the table from them. Because if you're sitting across the desk from them, they're telling you what they want you to hear. Whereas if you're examining the whole history of their life, good, bad, the ugly, warts and all, you get a pretty good image. And so there's a long history. Freud did this, Jung did this, a long history of analysts looking at historical figures and drawing conclusions, and that's what he did in his book, Bush on the Couch. But he's not claiming that Bush is taking drugs.
Yes.
He's just claiming he should.
The speech Castro was making on C-SPAN a couple weeks ago, and he was going through that book, and they were translating it in English, and I was listening to the comments that Castro was talking, that people in his office, in Bush's office, when they bring the briefs to him, they have to read them to him.
Yeah.
And he was quite amazed at all that's going on, and of course he's talking about prostitution is being accused of them of transporting that, and
Bush had taken that quote out of context from a high school term paper that was on the internet, and he accused Castro of it in a major speech based on a high school term paper that he had plagiarized off the internet. The White House later issued a retraction on that. But you know, let's both admit here, Helen, Fidel Castro is not, in my opinion anyway, a source that we should highly respect and seriously consider.
I agree.
He throws people who disagree with him. He throws people who disagree with him in jail.
Maybe someone ought to talk to Peter Peterson.
Yeah. Who's he?
Well, he's the author of Running on Empty.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Another good book. There are so many good books out there. Helen, we got to move along. Thanks for
Thank
the call.
Thank you very much.
Great to hear from you. Thank you for listening there in West Virginia. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis: poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
An ancient civilization that turned to dust holds important lessons for modern society, according to a new book. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Nineveh was a city of gleaming palaces set in the Fertile Crescent of Mesopotamia, but the capital of the Assyrian Empire crumbled away 4,000 years ago, done in by soil erosion and other environmental problems that destroyed the ancient civilization. Paul Ehrlich sees parallels in our current environmental troubles. Ehrlich and his wife Anne have written a new book called One with Nineveh. He says our society is also heading for disaster, but unlike the Assyrians, we should know better.
The rulers of Mesopotamia, of Nineveh, had a lot of pride, a lot of hubris, but they had the justification that they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know that they were ruining their environmental supports. On the other hand, the rulers of the United States have a scientific community, the best in the world, that has been telling them, along with the rest of the world's scientists, in no uncertain terms, that we are destroying our life support systems, and one of the main ways we're doing it is burning too much coal, oil, and natural gas.
Ehrlich says burning fossil fuels could be our undoing because carbon dioxide and other greenhouse pollutants are causing the Earth to overheat. He says the science behind this assertion is rock solid, but people continue to play politics with the issue, and he says we continue to waste our natural wealth like there's no tomorrow.
We're like the profligate child that inherited a vast fortune from the planet, and every year we're writing a bigger check on that fortune, and the politicians are very proud of it, but the scientists are watching what's happening to the balance in the checking account, and the balance is going down ever more rapidly.
Ehrlich, who also wrote the 1968 bestseller The Population Bomb, sees irony in the fact that Nineveh was located in what is now Iraq. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I can just see it now. The FBI report's coming back when the whistleblowers, Colleen Rowley, writing an FBI report. This I can't claim authorship of this. One of the folks, Waggy for CS on our message board. He says they weren't interested in learning how to fill prescriptions or bill HMOs. They just wanted to learn how to repackage drugs. How strange. Yeah, can't you just see it now? You know, those terrorists who attacked us, they went to pharmaceutical school, but they didn't want to learn how to put the proper labels on. And now we find the Sydney Morning Herald this morning reports this U.S.-Australia trade agreement. Are you familiar with this thing? We just concluded a trade deal with Australia, which they basically said, this is the price of our going into Iraq with you. We want essentially a free trade deal. Australia has been begging for this thing for years. And this was the deal the Bush administration cut with Howard, with the Australians, for them to be part of the coalition of the billing. And so the deal has been done. And interestingly, this new treaty with Australia prevents the import of pharmaceuticals from Australia into the United States. A lot of people were buying their drugs from Australia. They're packaged in English. Postage is pretty much the same as from, you know, outside the United States. I mean, it's kind of flat rate. Canada, Australia, it doesn't matter the difference. And so you can't buy, you cannot now buy Australian pharmaceuticals by treaty. It also watered down the Australian government's ability to negotiate lower medicine prices from drug companies in the United States. Now, gee, who would write such an agreement? Well, it turns out the two guys who were in charge of the negotiations, Ralph Ives and Claude Berkey. Ralph, they've left their jobs now. The deal is cut. Next month, Ralph becomes vice president for global strategy at AdvaMed, a medical products industry group. And Claude is now director of global government affairs at the pharmaceutical company Abbott Laboratories. What a surprise! The Bush administration looking out for the interests, not of you and me, but of the pharmaceutical industry and its millionaires and billionaires. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira Gravatt for engineering it, to Brad Walrod for our music, and Shelby Lepree for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to Mike Toth for our clips, and to Ben with the White Rose Society for our archives. Thanks to the folks at our chat room, and thanks to you for showing up. See you again tomorrow, same time, same place.
You have been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration